Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Welcome on in. Sunday, September 8th is here, the long-awaited week one return of the Black and Gold, and what do you know, it is a home opener to start the season. Welcome in those kitty cats from Carolina to the Superdome. The Panthers, always a pesky bunch, though, as we know, dealing with them over the years. This will be the one of two matchups against there. Steve Geller, along with Jeff Nowak, bringing you to 10 o'clock. That's when the countdown to kickoff will take over with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, in tow. And Jeff loved this message this morning from another Jeff on 0809 on our text line. I'm mowing the lawn right now. Y'all are awesome. Stay local. Listen local. Could not agree more with that statement.
Yeah, that totally wasn't me. I definitely wasn't
man,
the guy
you texted
texting
into our line here.
I think, no, he's saying for Jeff, not from Jeff.
Oh, jeez. I got you. Okay.
Gosh, Steve.
No, that was for Jeff. Yes,
yeah,
that's what Cullen just typed into the message box.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, listeners. But yeah, it's lawn mowing time, right? It's 9 a.m. It's not hot yet. Although it's been kind of cool. Anyway,
we got that cool front coming in.
Yeah, this is a tangent. We are off topic. We're here to talk about football.
Are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Although I am sponsored by John Deere Tractors.
Wow, congratulations.
That's a lie.
Looking at this matchup, Jeff, obviously the biggest, I think, talking point is how is this Saints offense going to look? A new scheme that we haven't seen around, obviously, for quite some years with the Sean Payton / Pete Carmichael regime way of things, you know, going on now. We've got Clint Kubiak in a new system, and I think the biggest question is really not the scheme. It's talking about the offensive line, and one of those questions is the development, or the stall development at least, of a guy like Trevor Penning. Well, new offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak was asked this week about Trevor and asked exactly how is the young tackle progressing.
He's doing everything we've asked him to do. He's a super coachable guy, and you know, he's had some really good practices, and he's in the a lot can be said about where he started and where he's come from. And, I'm really proud to get to coach Trevor and Rick Dennison and John Benton. And those guys have done a phenomenal job with him and with the whole offensive line. But, you know, he's earned the right to go out there and play really well on Sunday. And I'm looking forward to, you know, going and seeing what he does. But it's a five-man show up there, and it's all five working together. It's not just him.
Five-man show indeed. And, yeah, hopefully we're seeing Trevor mowing down some defensive linemen.
I see what you did there. And, you know, if you've listened to Clint talk, Clint's not the most vociferous, emotional press conference giver in the world. So
he's like,
to me,
they won't ask for me anymore.
To me, that's like a 10 answer for him in terms of, like, emotion. So, I do feel, you know, it's funny. When he said that, kind of my ears perked up because, you know, I think that's something that this team has made a point of is – we're going to stand behind Trevor. We're going to kind of gas the guy up. We're going to give him opportunities. We're not going to have him going out there feeling like any mistake you make is going to have the, you know, the rug pulled out from under you, right? And they did have that week prior to the, you know, the preseason finale where you had Oli Udoh getting first team reps. They were splitting first team reps. I don't think that was ever really a competition so much as it was, hey, if we do need to change course, we want to make sure that Oli has at least some idea of what a first team rep with the first team
right,
or at right tackle would look like. But no, I think that's been a big point of this offseason is not just developing Trevor Penning. It's to have a young player go out there with confidence. And he would be the first one to admit. And I talked to him in the locker room this week, and he admitted, like, that first preseason game, the game against the Cardinals, he was hesitant. He was tentative. He was not attacking with his hands. He was waiting. And it's something that, you know, y'all saw it. He saw it too. The coaches saw it too. And that's been something that, you know, he's been working on improving. And I kind of asked him, it's like, okay, how do you fix that? Because it's like, you know what you're supposed to do. It's just a matter of going out there and doing it. And he said, yeah, it's just about being aggressive, just about being mean out there and being the one who to initiate the action, be the one to redirect the defensive end, not the other way around. You can't allow the defensive player to dictate everything that's happening on every play. Like, if you can, if he's a big, strong guy. If he can just get his hands on a guy, he's going to have the advantage. Now, when he struggles, it's because he never gets his hands on him. He either waits too long and gets burned inside.
Right.
He sets too far outside, then gets bull rushed, right? But if when he can get his hands on the guy's in the interior of the guy's pads and navigate that way, he has the advantage. He's a giant human being. He's an incredibly strong human being. He's going to be stronger than any defensive end he goes against in that matchup. Well, Jadeveon Clowney is probably a bad example because Jadeveon Clowney might be the strongest person on the planet. I remember stories about him at South Carolina where the coaches were getting on him for not taking his lifting seriously. So he like went in there just like without any warm up and set their deadlift record. Like, I don't even know if it was deadlift.
Mic drop.
It was some sort of like lifting record. And it was just like, no, I am that dude. So maybe Jadeveon Clowney might have a strength advantage. I don't know. But either way, you know, I think that I'm hopeful for Trevor. You know, I think he gets a lot of grief, and rightfully so. He's a first-round pick. When you're a first-round pick, you've all that criticism is earned. You know, all that criticism is always going to be there, and you know it. But I do think his approach is what it needs to be, and hopefully he can go out there and continue to improve. He's not going to be perfect. The coaching staff knows he's not going to be perfect. You're going to need to send help his way. You're going to need to chip with tight ends and linebackers. Running backs. But, you know, I just need him to play neutral a majority of the time. We've talked a lot about this. Like, you're not going out there as an offensive lineman with the goal of I have to win 100% of my reps. It is, I need to play a majority of my reps neutral. I need to win clean some of the time, and I need to limit the number of times that I lose and it impacts the play. You can lose in such a way that, you know, the defensive end never gets there. We never talk about it. No one's watching the defensive end who almost got to the quarterback. We're watching the ball. We're watching the result of the play. So we'll see how that goes. But I think Trevor there was a scenario where Trevor gets to the week 3 of the preseason, and that job is already gone. You've already decided to move on. He made the improvements to hold on to that job, and now it's a matter of, okay, we need you to play at such a level that you can keep that job.
Yeah, looking at the other side of the ball, obviously, you know, you kind of talked about there's not been much, you know, yapping about a rookie, you know, starting on this offensive line, your first-round pick, but also right next to him at that guard spot on the left side, kind of some indecision there, and I know Lucas Patrick is your guy right now, but hoping that we can see more development from someone like Nick Saldiveri, obviously. Good to see him getting back in the flow here.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really talked about the game day elevations yet, but the Saints elevated linebacker Kalik Hudson and defensive tackle Kendall Vickers, which means they're going to have 3 players inactive after the injured players. So you can only have 48 active players on game day. They have 4 players who are already ruled out, which is defensive tackle Colin Saunders, tight end Dallin Hulker, and then linebackers DeMarco Jackson and the rookie Jalen Ford. So they're going to, with the 2 elevations, that means you have to have 3 more players inactive. I expect one of those players is going to be the backup quarterback, with that third guy being the emergency third quarterback who doesn't count against your active roster spots. So you're going to have 2 more players inactive. I imagine one of those is going to be John Ridgeway, just because he just got here.
Yeah.
And then maybe a wide receiver. But what they didn't do is elevate a offensive lineman, which is surprising to me because Nick Saldiveri just got back to practice this week, but not elevating a lineman, not elevating, say, Shane Lemieux, who would have been my guess, means that they're clearly comfortable going into this game with Nick Saldiveri as the backup. If Lucas Patrick or Eric McCoy gets hurt, that would probably get Nick Saldiveri in the game. So they clearly feel comfortable that he could at least play in a backup capacity if they need him. So that's a good sign. I don't think that you're really looking at him as the starter right now, but he was the guy that you went into camp thinking, I think, you know, he's got the inside track to win that starting job. So if Lucas struggles, maybe he is a guy you turn to. But either way, it's a good sign for him because he missed a lot of time with that calf injury. And you had to wonder, okay, where is he? I don't think that you're going to go into this game with 7 active offensive linemen.
Yeah.
And if you were concerned that he couldn't play, you were going to have to elevate somebody. So that's a good sign. Because right now their backups are Landon Young, Ole Udo, and Nick Saldivari. That's it. They only have eight.
Interesting, right, to see how that ends up panning out. I wonder if even do you try to get some reps for Nick Saldivari in this game today, even if Lucas Patrick is not struggling, but you want to give him like a blow, a breather at some time during the match.
You don't typically do that with the offensive line. Like
I know you want that continuity.
Yeah, it's you don't typically see rest downs. Like you don't see, you know, offensive linemen coming out for, you know, a defensive end who rushes six times in a row. You'll rotate him out just to get a breather on a long drive. You don't really do that with the offensive line, so I don't think that's going to happen unless there's an injury. My question, and we haven't really seen a lot of it, who's the jumbo lineman? Who's the jumbo tight end? They haven't really done much of it at all in the preseason games. I think we got one rep, and it was Landon Young. So he would be my guess is if you do run jumbo.
Right, you've seen it from him. So,
you send Landon Young out there. But I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's somebody else and we're not seeing. But with only eight active offensive linemen, I don't know. The backup situation is kind of murky. Like, okay, so Ole Udo will be your backup right tackle, right? That makes sense because he's been getting reps there. Landon Young will be your backup left tackle. Lucas Patrick will be your backup center. Nick Saldivari is your backup left guard. And then they would swap. If Eric McCoy went out, I imagine you would send Nick Saldivari in at left guard and Lucas Patrick in at center. But who's your backup right guard? I genuinely don't know. It's probably one of Landon Young or Ole Udo. We've never seen Nick Saldivari play right guard.
Right.
I'm sure he can, but you would think, hey, you would want to get reps for that guy. I haven't seen Lucas Patrick play the right guard, so I'm not sure about that. I would guess it's Ole Udo if because he's already on the right side, but that's they're definitely putting a lot of faith in the guys they have out there, because you know you get a couple injuries at the offensive line and suddenly it's like, man, hopefully we make it through this game.
Unofficial depth chart, obviously the Saints have Landon Young as the backup right guard to Caesar.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, and I mean the depth chart doesn't really mean a ton.
Exactly.
But either way, you're asking a tackle to bump inside and play guard because both of those guys are tackles by trade.
What we're going to do is take a break. When we get back, we'll get a little bit of insight on these Carolina Panthers. Believe in Panthers podcast host Des Johnson joined me and my co-host here, Jeff Nowak, on the Inside Black and Gold podcast. Got some bites on him, as we'll hear about those kitty cats when we return right here on WWL Saints Radio after the break. So stay tuned right here on WWL. Who dat?
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back into First Take. A little more life coming into this Caesars Superdome as we get ready for that noon kickoff between the Saints and Carolina Panthers. Team WWL, our booth is set on the Loge level, Gate B atrium. The Cajun Cannon will be by shortly as the Bud Light countdown to kickoff starts 10 a.m.
Yeah, it looks like they're stocking up on some Bloody Mary mix over here. So let's
get ready for the real crew, him and Craig showing up.
Get those beans happening.
Exactly. Jeff, when you look at some of the things from this Carolina Panthers squad, I think one of the big additions, obviously, new head coach, but one of the first things I felt like they did was invest heavily in that offensive line after you saw, I think, Bryce Young get sacked, 61 times last year. The poor young guy never really had a chance. And I believe in podcast host Des Johnson joined us, and he talked about the additions of Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt to that Panthers O-line.
Those are big men. Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt are gigantic. They are space eaters. And when you can make Austin Corbett, who's moved to center, when you can make him look little, because Austin Corbett's not a small man, you've done something. And they've paid over $100 million for these two guys. So that was their core. That was their first two signings. When Canales came in and Morgan became the GM, they wanted to fix the defensive line. They wanted to fix the offensive line and build from within. And that's exactly what they've done. You guys would know, being Saints guys, the best years of your offensive line is when you had Drew Brees and you had those two all-pro guards and a center in front of him to solidify that front so he could actually build that pocket. Bryce didn't have that last year. He was getting linemen getting shoved into that pocket, and he didn't really know where to go with the ball after the fact. It's coming out faster. Canales is preaching 2.7 or less. And from what we've seen so far from Bryce, he's really adapted that. Bryce is starting to do stuff like anticipate windows and stuff that you would expect from a top quarterback coming into the league. He's throwing the spots. He's not throwing. Last year, he was throwing the players, and they weren't open, so separation was an issue. This year, he's throwing the spots. And when they played Buffalo in preseason week three, we got a chance to see the starters for a drive, and they went down and scored a touchdown. And it was a mix of run, pass. It was amazing as a Panther fan and reporter to see some pass plays from the Panthers a couple weeks ago where the wide receivers were wide open. Like they were open. Like we weren't used to seeing that, where there's no one in the frame. It's just Adam Thielen, like in the middle of the field, and there's no one there, and he's got room to run. It's like it looks easy again. It looked hard last year for Carolina to just get down the field to be able to kick a field goal. That's not going to be the instance this year. Like it's Carolina. I really feel like, it's going to sound like a homer, but I feel like Carolina is the one that can have that Houston leap this year. Wow. From 2-15 to middle of the pack, or even this division's weird. Like even nine wins could probably win the NFC South. So you go 5-1 or 4-2, whatever in the division, you kind of set yourself up for maybe hosting a playoff game. Like it's wild, but it's not out of reach. Again, Houston did this last year, and just really, if you think 18 months before that, we were talking about how Houston was a wasteland. Nobody wanted to go to Houston, like with the stuff with the owner and Deshaun Watson and everything else. Now they're getting picked as a Super Bowl contender, like literally 2 years later. Like, so things can change really fast in the NFL. And if you already have a number one overall pick at quarterback in his second year and a support system around him, we're just starting a year later than we should have with the Bryce Young experiment, in my opinion.
Love hearing from Dez Johnson, the Believe in Panthers podcast, which he does with former NFL running back Jonathan Stewart.
I'd like him to narrate my life.
Right. Sounds fantastic. Maybe a little homerism there, thinking that Panthers can make that
Houston
Texans leap. But I think that because of what the Texans did last year with C.J. Stroud and a young quarterback, there is that hope for teams in that rebuild mode that things can come together a lot more quickly. And I think, obviously, when you address that offensive line and you hear them him talking about how the Saints basically copied that Saints model of getting those, you know, those guards to protect that shorter in stature quarterback to help them in the pocket, might be a big bonus to Bryce Young. And I'll be interested to see if the Saints defense, the pass rush, is able to exploit that at all.
No, I mean, that was a very important thing for Drew during his career, was to be able to, like, that the interior of the pocket, right? When you're not a mobile guy, you need to be able to step up into throws. You need to be able to kind of create that bubble. And that's what they were able to do with Jari and Carl Nix, I think.
Right.
And, you know, like that was a big part of Drew's success, especially early in his career, was keeping him clean in that pocket, because you're 6 feet tall. You know, you're a poor man's 6 feet, which means I think Drew was more like 5'11", but whatever. like Bryce Young is a poor man's 5'10", right? So, like, that's even more important for Bryce. And, no, I mean, that's the smart thing to do. The Giants did the same thing, right? Like, the Giants were like, okay, we got to see what we have in this guy, and the only way you can see what you have is to at least give him some help. Give him a line. Give him a receiver that he can throw to. That's what the Panthers did. They went out and got Xavier Leggett. They went out and got Deontay Johnson. They paid a bunch of money on the interior of that offensive line. The Giants did the same thing. They went out and got Malik Nabers. They signed John Runyon Jr. The new Runyon. I remember the old Runyon because he and Michael Strahan used to go at it all the time.
Right.
And then Illuminor, I think, for the Giants. So, you know, like, that's when you are trying to figure out whether you have a guy at the quarterback position. You can't constantly be undercutting his ability to have success and then be like, well, you know, he just didn't have it. Like, no, you are a part of this. You are an equal part of this conversation. So we'll see how that goes for him. But I think he is in a much better situation this year than he was last year. And the Frank Reich, you know,
one thing
that I tell people all the time, and, you know, the Panthers are a perfect example of, like, everyone's like, okay, anybody but DA, it's you know, you could hire anybody and you would be happy. I promise you,
be careful what you wish.
It can and very much will in certain situations get worse, and that's what happened in Carolina. Like, they were like, they ran Matt Rhule out of town, and then they were like, oh, Frank Reich, he can't possibly be worse than Matt Rhule. And then by week 11, you had the the special teams coordinator as your head coach. You're like, oh, okay, it got worse. You're right. And then you go into this year and you have the number one overall pick, and you're not even the team making it. It can always get worse. But no, I am curious to see Bryce, because I like Bryce. I think everyone's quit on Bryce already because he's the number one pick.
He shouldn't have been.
Yeah, and so you know, I think Bryce is gonna surprise some people this year, but I don't know about that Texans turnaround. I don't think that's you know, every year there seems to be one team that does that. I don't know if it's gonna be the Panthers, but even like from the Panthers' perspective, you won two games last year. If you go out and you win six or seven games, and you're in
massive
the conversation
yeah.
for the NFC South, you know, throughout the majority of the season, that's a success. That's a big improvement. So from that perspective, I do think they have the ability to turn things around from where they were. I think, you know, 10 wins and a playoff berth is a little outside of the likely scenarios here. But I'm not going to begrudge anyone for being a homer in week zero. Right?
And having that hope.
Like, you should have. Like, that's the time you should be talking about how, what if things go right? What will have to happen?
Yeah.
Not, here's all the things that I think are going to be terrible. Like, who does that benefit?
looking at the new addition here at head coach, we asked Des Johnson about new head coach Dave Canales, what he brings to this Panthers punch.
He is that type of personality that doesn't need an alarm clock. Like, he literally is the type that wakes up on his own, like, every morning because his mind just can't wait to start off his day in his world. Like, he's that positive. And in the very beginning, it kind of came off like, there's no way this dude could be this positive all the time. But he is. He really is. Like, that's him. And he's a player's coach. The players adore him. They love him. They will run through a wall from him. And the difference with him, we were talking about this on Believe in Panthers Tuesday. Dave Canales, his coaching style is different than, say, like a Bill Belichick or the old guard, where it was like tough love type stuff. Dave is the type where he will tell you, this is the drill we're running today. This is why we're running the drill. And this is what we're going to achieve by completing this drill. Like, he'll explain to the players why they're doing something as opposed to just doing it and trust me, this is going to work if we do it right. And it gives the players ownership, and the players, especially the veterans, they love the fact that, okay, so we're going to do this Oklahoma drill, whatever. Why? Oh, that's why we're doing it. Or we're going to do this 2-minute drill in the red zone today. Why? That's why we're doing it. Like, and they're getting that explanation. So Dave is I'd call him one of these new breed coaches, one of the younger coaches, like a Sean McVay or a Mike McDonald or someone that's kind of doing it a little different than their predecessors would have. And it's a little jarring here in Carolina because we're used to having defensive guys be our coach really throughout our entire history, from Dom Capers all the way down to Ron Rivera. The formula here has typically been defense with a defensive head at front, so your offense is a bit conservative. With Dave, it sounds like it's gonna be kind of still the same, but a little bit flipped, where they are gonna be very heavy on the run. He's mentioned that so many times now, and I do believe him on that. Finally, a coach here is like, we're gonna run the ball, and they're actually gonna run it, which will help protect Bryce. Bryce is gonna become this guru at this quick, almost West Coast offense type of passing game, where the key is to get the ball out to your guys in spots and basically conduct the offense. Bryce can do that. He can do that. He won a Heisman doing that. So that's not a problem. They've got two capable running backs. I'm really interested in seeing Miles Sanders in this offense because they paid him $25 million, and he was just kind of lost in the sauce last year. Yeah. But now we know why he was. Plus, we mentioned on Believe in Panthers at the end of the preseason last year, Miles had a hip injury and went into the season with it and never was 100%. So people piled onto him because of the amount of money that he was getting paid. But the situation just didn't lend itself to help Miles Sanders. And now, with a new regime coming in, I feel like Dave Canales kind of looked at the running back room and was like, oh, Miles Sanders is here. Miles Sanders is a great running back. We can use it. Oh, Chuba Hubbard's here. He almost rushed for 1,000 yards. You have stuff here. Like, we don't have to go rushing out. But let's just go get Jonathan Brooks in the second round just in case, you know, just to kind of round it out. Like, they've thought of everything. And it's weird, as a Panther fan for 30-plus years, it's only happened a couple of times where the regime kind of figures it out and you're like, oh, okay, this might work. And we get it before the nation does. And by the time the nation catches up, they're 7-1 or 8-0. Like, where'd Carolina come from? And like, we were kind of seeing all this happen, but it doesn't happen frequently. So when it does happen, people are so shocked that Carolina's doing this. But I sense the same thing I sense when Rivera was first here. It took Rivera a little longer to get it going. But same situation. You got a number one overall pick here. You're having to build around him. How are you going to build your offense? How are you going to build this defense to support that? It's the exact same situation. Bryce is just a half a foot shorter.
Yeah, something that Des mentioned there about the Panthers was the running game. And that was one question I have, too, coming into this season is, what can we expect from a guy like Miles Sanders, who really kind of disappeared last year and people were considering him washed already at age 27?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you know, when you talk about, okay, why did Bryce Young get sacked 61 times, 62 times? Why did that offense struggle as much as it did? Well, when you can't run the ball, nothing good is going to happen for you. And, you know, they didn't have the weapons for Bryce last year. They didn't have the protection. So, yeah, I think they are going to try to establish the run today. And the Saints are going to have to hold up. Because if you can get the Panthers into passing situations, the Saints have the advantage. You can get Chase Young on the field. You can bump Cam Jordan into that NASCAR package and really get after him. If you're constantly in third and short, you can't do that. You can't take advantage of your pass rushers because, you know, you gotta protect the run. And, you know, the Saints are without Colin Saunders today. That's really his forte. He's a run stuffer. He's a run downs defensive tackle. So you're going to have to rely on Brian Brzee probably on the early downs. You're going to have to, you know, Kendall Vickers is probably the guy. I would imagine John Ridgeway will be inactive. I think A.T. Perry will be inactive with that injured hand. And you're going to have to pick somebody else. I don't know. I don't think you go into it with five defensive tackles. So we'll have to see how that all plays out. But someone's going to have to step up and be that run-stuffing defensive tackle because the Panthers are going to try to protect Bryce by establishing the run.
Looking at the Panthers' passing attack, too, you really just had a guy in, you know, Adam Thielen a year ago. They obviously upgraded with adding DJ Deontay Chark, Johnson, right. And then drafting Xavier Legette. And, you know, from a fan point of view, I hate to see a guy like Legette ending on the Panthers just because I like his personality. I like the talent level there. But obviously he becomes now, you know, black and gold enemy, public enemy number one on their side. But a really fun interview all the time from him. And just you see the joy of playing football when you talk to Xavier Legette.
He's got that South Carolina accent. I throw him with a deep ball, man. He's a fun guy. And seriously, listen to him talk. That accent is fantastic. Very much a South Carolina guy.
Definitely.
South Carolina boy. But, we're not going to talk a ton more about the Panthers the rest of the way. I do want to mention Derek Brown is crazy. He had 103 tackles last season. Think about it. He's a defensive tackle, or at least a defensive end in a 3-4, which is a defensive tackle, right? The next highest tackle, that's an NFL record. He set an NFL record for tackles at the defensive line position. Not just defensive tackles, defensive ends, too. The next highest total for a defensive lineman after that last year was Harrison Phillips from the Vikings. He had 92 tackles. Pete Werner had 93 tackles. He's a linebacker. That's nuts. And part of that is, hey, you know, teams are trying to run the ball on you. The Panthers were terrible against the run.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's getting a lot of opportunities. But he's a big boy. He's going to be involved in that action. And the Saints are going to have to figure that out. You're going to have to double team that guy. Like, you cannot just sit there and say, okay, whoever is lined up over him, you take care of him. You know, Eric McCoy, you take him one-on-one. No. You do not want to be in one-on-one matchups with Derek Brown.
Speaking of defensive tackles, a guy we love here is Cam Jordan, who will be seeing some time moving inside this season. We'll hear from him on some cuts when we get back from the break. Talking a little more black and gold, of course, now switching gears from our little Panthers preview to back into Saints talk. Want to hear from you. Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line 504-260-1870. Kicking off things here in the Superdome. High noon. Mike Hawes, Deuce McAllister on the call. We'll be having the Bud Light countdown to kickoff coming up at 10 a.m. with the Cajun Cannon after First Take ends. Well, first, we're going to take a break and be back with more right after this on WWL Saints Radio. Who dat? Welcome back into First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Hanging out here in the Superdome as we get ready for that noon kickoff between the Saints and the Carolina Panthers. Well, team's getting going. NFC South showdown right off the bat to start the season. And you would think, you know, maybe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Atlanta Falcons be squaring off too, but that's not the case. We just have the only in-division rivalry matchup in week one.
Yeah, and the Saints get, like, most of their division games out of the way by, like, week 10.
Yeah.
So, you know, these
usually
early,
they close them out, right?
Yeah, I mean, these games are important, man. Like, you gotta win these games, especially, you know, you look at, okay, what's happened the last 3 years? You know, they've missed the playoffs 2 out of 3 years. Twice, two of those times, they went 9-8 and missed the playoffs in week 18 on a tiebreaker. You know why that happens? Because these NFC matchups and these NFC South matchups in particular, you don't take advantage of them early in the season and they come back to bite you. The Saints went 4-2 in the division last year. Like, you should be, man, if you can go 4-2 in your division, you should be happy about
it. You set yourself up for success, yeah.
Yeah, you got to sweep one of those teams. I know Bobby's talked about this. You got to sweep one of those teams, right?
And
you got to go 1-1 against the other two. And the Panthers have to be the team you look at and say, well, the Saints should sweep them. right? And so if you can't sweep the Panthers, then you got to sweep somebody else to go 4-2. Because 3-3, that's not good enough. Not if you want to win the division. If you're trying to sneak, if you're trying to backdoor into the playoffs, you can be like, all right, fine, we'll try to win the, you know, hopefully we can have a good record in the NFC and sneak in past a team like the Packers last year, right? But you got to go beat those teams head to head,
right?
And that's what the Saints didn't do. So that's what these games are. You know, you gotta play well. You know, like that's the frustrating thing is like losing a game that you played well. It's frustrating, but you can at least take positives out of that. Losing a game because you came out flat and were down 10 at halftime and then couldn't make the comeback, which happened at least 3 times last year, maybe 4. You know, that those are the games where you look at, and that's when I understand why people are frustrated with the quarterback and the head coach, because that's where you expect, okay, the quarterback is a veteran quarterback, got to come out hot. You got to come out playing well, not work your way into a game like a rookie quarterback. So that's what we'll see today. Well, that's what, if the fans leave happy today, it's going to be because that's not what happened, or that's what happened, is Derek Carr came out and played well, and the Saints took advantage of what should be an overmatched opponent.
Looking at the defensive side of the ball, obviously the biggest strength everybody feels is this Saints squad. And a key piece on that, the old man in Cam Jordan, love talking to him, hear what he has to say, very vocal, great personality. Well, he's entering, you know, everyone's going to feel old here because I certainly do, year 14 for Cam. Does he get as excited for these games even though it is week 14? What's it like for him?
I'm like a little kid today. It's like, you know, the hard work you put in through training camp, being away from the fam, focusing in on honing the craft. You do all that to get to game week. You know, at the final preseason game, you're just like, get me to week one. We're in week one now. So it's a good place to be in. I think we got phenomenal talent on the team. I think we have great leaders on the team. I think we have great players on this team. And all we have to do is realize our greater potential and go capitalize.
Cam also was asked early on, what is the challenge of this Panthers offense?
Darn near a whole new offensive line, for sure. New OC, everything's sort of different. And at the same time, it's about us. So we got to go ahead and play our calls. We have to play our techniques. We have to focus on what we know we can be successful at.
You got a lot of different players coming into that mix, and he mentioned a new offensive coordinator for the Panthers. So Cam was asked, you know, you really don't know what to expect from Carolina, even though they are an NFC South familiar opponent.
Carolina's revamped their whole offense. You know, we'll see what changes have been made when we get in the game. The great thing about week one is you're so full of energy, you can't wait to hit the field. The worst part about week one is there's no such thing as like a true game plan, because you're expecting to see things, but you can't game plan off of a preseason. Preseason, you're getting rudimentary, you know, elementary, vanilla stuff. You know, you're getting, hey, we want to see guys play the right way, see if they're a part of, going to be one of us, versus, hey, this is our playbook. Come get this first 15, you know?
Love that from Cam. And I think hard not to be a fan favorite still, obviously, going into year 14 for what he's done. A lot of folks down on him for his season a year ago, played really hurt, and he's one of those guys. I'm anxious to see this bounce back season for Cam.
Yeah, I always, you know, I take it personally when people are like, ah, DeMario's so old, Cam's so old, Derek's so old, because we're the same age. I'm the same age as all three of these guys. But and I'm older than Tyron, but and everyone talks about how Tyron's like ancient. But no, you know, what he said there about week one is true, and that's why these week one games, you never want to overreact to them. The Saints could come out and win by 40. I'll say, pump the brakes, don't overreact. The Saints could win by 2. I'll say, pump the brakes, don't overreact. The Saints could lose by 15. I would say, pump the brakes, don't overreact. No one will listen to me in that third scenario. But, you know, it's because you really don't know what to expect, right? Like, these, you see weird results in week one. Go back to 2022. And we're talking about, or no, 2021, and we're talking about the Saints beating the Packers 38-3 in Jacksonville after getting displaced by a hurricane. And everyone would be like, wow, what's wrong with the Packers? The Saints are the best team in the NFL. And then you fast forward to the NFC Championship, the Saints are sitting at home, right, having not made the playoffs after a 9-8 season, and the Packers are you know, fighting Tom Brady to get to the Super Bowl. So, maybe it wasn't Tom Brady. I can't remember who was the other team, but the Packers were in the NFC Championship, but they might have been in the 49ers. Either way, the Saints have been good week one, and I think it's because they've been good at adjusting to what the other team is doing.
Closing down First Take. We're going to take a break, but one more segment when we get back here on WWL Saints Radio. Stay tuned as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown to kick off with the Cajun Cannon showing up. Want to hear from you as well, so stay tuned right here on WWL. Back here on the First Take as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown to kick off with the Cajun Cannon coming up at 10. Just check the line, Jeff, for this matchup between Saints and Panthers kicking off at noon. Was at 4, now down to a 3.5-point favorite for the Black and Gold.
Yeah, well, that's still a solid, solid line. I mean, I don't know what to expect, to be honest. Like, I'd like to think the Saints win this game going away, but I think it could be a close one. And like, these games have been close. Even last year when
right.
the Panthers were struggling, these were close games because of how the defense plays. So, you know, I'm hoping that the Saints can blow it open at some point, but they just got to execute. They got to run their, you know, read their keys. They got to play well. And if they do that, I don't care what the result is. I just want to win.
As we close things out here, Jeff, big thanks to Ashley and Luke for getting us set up, also having coffee ready for us today.
And a reminder,
appreciate it.
Go to the gate on your ticket. Go to the gate on your ticket.
Coming up next, the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff with the Cajun Cannon Bobby Hebert. Who dat, everybody? Talk to you soon.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back into First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Hanging out here in the Superdome as we get ready for that noon kickoff between the Saints and the Carolina Panthers. Well, team's getting going. NFC South showdown right off the bat to start the season. And you would think, you know, maybe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Atlanta Falcons be squaring off too, but that's not the case. We just have the only in-division rivalry matchup in Week 1.
Yeah, and the Saints get, like, most of their division games out of the way by, like, week 10.
Yeah.
So, you know, these
usually
early,
they close them out, right?
Yeah, I mean, these games are important, man. Like, you gotta win these games, especially, you know, you look at, okay, what's happened the last 3 years? You know, they've missed the playoffs 2 out of 3 years. Twice, two of those times, they went 9-8 and missed the playoffs in week 18 on a tiebreaker. You know why that happens? Because these NFC matchups and these NFC South matchups in particular, you don't take advantage of them early in the season and they come back to bite you. The Saints went 4-2 in the division last year. Like, you should be, man, if you can go 4-2 in your division, you should be happy about
it. You set yourself up for success, yeah.
Yeah, you got to sweep one of those teams. I know Bobby's talked about this. You got to sweep one of those teams, right?
And
you got to go 1-1 against the other two. And the Panthers have to be the team you look at and say, well, the Saints should sweep them. Right, and so if you can't sweep the Panthers, then you got to sweep somebody else to go 4-2. Because 3-3, that's not good enough. Not if you want to win the division. If you're trying to backdoor into the playoffs, you can be like, all right, fine, we'll try to win the. You know, hopefully we can have a good record in the NFC and sneak in past a team like the Packers last year, right? But you got to go beat those teams head to head,
right?
And that's what the Saints didn't do. So that's what these games are. You know, you gotta play well. You know, like, that's the frustrating thing is, like, losing a game that you played well, it's frustrating, but you can at least take positives out of that. Losing a game because you came out flat and were down 10 at halftime and then couldn't make the comeback, which happened at least 3 times last year, maybe 4. You know, those are the games where you look at, and that's when I understand why people are frustrated with the quarterback and the head coach, because that's where you expect, okay, the quarterback is a veteran quarterback, got to come out hot. You got to come out playing well, not work your way into a game like a rookie quarterback. So that's what we'll see today. Well, that's what, if the fans leave happy today, it's going to be because that's not what happened, or that's what happened is Derek Carr came out and played well, and the Saints took advantage of what should be an overmatched opponent.
Looking at the defensive side of the ball, obviously the biggest strength everybody feels is this Saints squad. And a key piece on that, the old man in Cam Jordan, love talking to him, hear what he has to say, very vocal, great personality. Well, he's entering, you know, everyone's going to feel old here because I certainly do, year 14 for Cam. Does he get as excited for these games even though it is week 14? What's it like for him?
I'm like a little kid today. It's like, you know, the hard work you put in through training camp, being away from the fam, focusing in on honing the craft. You do all that to get to game week. I mean, you know, at the final preseason game, you're just like, get me to week one. We're in week one now. So it's a good place to be in. I think we got phenomenal talent on the team. I think we have great leaders on the team. I think we have great players on this team. And all we have to do is realize our greater potential and go capitalize.
Cam also was asked early on, what is the challenge of this Panthers offense?
Darn near a whole new offensive line, for sure. New OC, everything's sort of different. And at the same time, it's about us. So we got to go ahead and play our calls. We have to play our techniques. We have to focus on what we know we can be successful at.
You got a lot of different players coming into that mix, and he mentioned a new offensive coordinator for the Panthers. So Cam was asked, you know, you really don't know what to expect from Carolina, even though they are an NFC South familiar opponent.
Carolina's revamped their whole offense. You know, we'll see what changes have been made when we get in the game. The great thing about week one is you're so full of energy, you can't wait to hit the field. The worst part about week one is there's no such thing as like a true game plan because you're expecting to see things, but you can't game plan off of a preseason. Preseason, you're getting rudimentary, you know, elementary, vanilla stuff. You know, you're getting, hey, we want to see guys play the right way, see if they're a part of, going to be one of us, versus, hey, this is our playbook. Come get this first 15, you know?
Love that from Cam. And I think hard not to be a fan favorite still, obviously, going into year 14 for what he's done. A lot of folks down on him for his season a year ago, played really hurt, and he's one of those guys. I'm anxious to see this bounce back season for Cam.
Yeah, I always, you know, I take it personally when people are like, ah, DeMario's so old, Cam's so old, Derek's so old, because we're the same age. I'm the same age as all three of these guys. But and I'm older than Tyron, but and everyone talks about how Tyron's like ancient. But no, you know, what he said there about week one is true, and that's why these week one games, you never want to overreact to them. The Saints could come out and win by 40. I'll say, pump the brakes, don't overreact. The Saints could win by 2. I'll say, pump the brakes, don't overreact. The Saints could lose by 15. I would say, pump the brakes, don't overreact. No one will listen to me in that third scenario. But, you know, it's because you really don't know what to expect, right? Like, these, you see weird results in week one. Go back to 2022. And we're talking about, 2021, and we're talking about the Saints beating the Packers 38-3 in Jacksonville after getting displaced by a hurricane. And everyone would be like, wow, what's wrong with the Packers? The Saints are the best team in the NFL. And then you fast forward to the NFC Championship, the Saints are sitting at home, right, having not made the playoffs after a 9-8 season, and the Packers are you know, fighting Tom Brady to get to the Super Bowl. So, maybe it wasn't Tom Brady. I can't remember who was the other team, but the Packers were in the NFC Championship, but they're making better than the 49ers. Either way, the Saints have been good week one, and I think it's because they've been good at adjusting to what the other team is doing.
Closing down First Take. We're going to take a break, but one more segment when we get back here on WWL Saints Radio. Stay tuned as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown to kick off with the Cajun Cannon showing up. Want to hear from you as well, so stay tuned right here on WWL. Back here on the First Take as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown to kick off with the Cajun Cannon coming up at 10. Just check the line, Jeff, for this matchup between Saints and Panthers kicking off at noon. Was at 4, now down to a 3.5-point favorite for the black and gold.
Yeah, well, that's still a solid line. I mean, I don't know what to expect, to be honest. Like, I'd like to think the Saints win this game going away, but I think it could be a close one. And like, these games have been close. Even last year when the Panthers were struggling, these were close games because of how the defense plays. So, you know, I'm hoping that the Saints can blow it open at some point, but they just got to execute. They got to run their, you know, read their keys. They got to play well. And if they do that, I don't care what the result is. I just want to win.
As we close things out here, Jeff, big thanks to Ashley and Luke for getting us set up, also having coffee ready for us today.
And a reminder,
most appreciated.
Go to the gate on your ticket. Go to the gate on your ticket.
Coming up next, the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Who dat, everybody? Talk to you soon. Back here on the First Take as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff with the Cajun Cannon coming up at 10. Just check the line, Jeff, for this matchup between Saints and Panthers kicking off at noon. Was at 4, now down to a 3.5-point favorite for the black and gold.
Yeah, well, that's still a solid line. I mean, I don't know what to expect, to be honest. Like, I'd like to think the Saints win this game going away, but I think it could be a close one. And like, these games have been close. Even last year when the Panthers were struggling, these were close games because of how the defense plays. So, you know, I'm hoping that the Saints can blow it open at some point, but they just got to execute. They got to run their, you know, read their keys. They got to play well. And if they do that, I don't care what the result is. I just want to win.
As we close things out here, Jeff, big thanks to Ashley and Luke for getting us set up, also having coffee ready for us today.
And a reminder,
most appreciated.
Go to the gate on your ticket. Go to the gate on your ticket.
Coming up next, the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Who dat, everybody? Talk to you soon.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll off.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.